appear would not be able to prosecute those who decline to participate in the program. So, as a matter of Fourth Amendment law, is it necessary for your analysis program to have a military commander subject to the UCMJ Article 37 and make the order enforceable as a criminal matter?
No, Your Honor, not as a matter of Fourth Amendment.
So it's not necessarily as a matter of Fourth Amendment, Fourth Amendment law. And under the Fourth Amendment, could a civilian supervisor establish a urinalysis program and authorize a clerk, when the clerk determines it to be appropriate, to randomly generate lists and have those lists be the individuals who would be subjected to the urinalysis program?
As a Fourth Amendment matter, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So why wouldn't the same apply to the military? I'm not getting at the question of whether there was, in fact, an order in this case and whether the order was lawful, but could the armed forces establish a program under which commanders could authorize random inspections and the inspections would be scheduled by a NCO clerk, person who is in the process of randomly generating lists?
Could the armed forces establish such a system? Yes.
Okay. And would in what respect would that violate Rule 313B, if at all, if they did? That is, if a commander said, I want to have your analysis inspections of my command, and in order to ensure that it's never looked upon as a subterfuge for a search, I'm going to have my trusted clerk be the one who generates those numbers from a computer program that's impeccable.
Such a system, if an armed service were to follow it, would not appear to violate 313.
Okay. So in this case, what is it that has violated 313?
Your Honor, 313 says an inspection is an incident of command. And the Air Force has told us which command it is an incident of, that the urinalysis inspection is an incident of the unit commander's command. And it's important to note that in this context, it was the government that bore the burden. Under Military Rule of Evidence 311E, once the defense raised the challenge to the urinalysis admissibility and the derivative evidence, the confession, the government bore the burden to demonstrate the admissibility of that evidence. And the government chose one theory and one theory only to support the admissibility of that evidence, and that is that this was a permissible inspection by the installation commander. But, however, the Air Force Instruction 44-120 trumps that argument. And so what we have here is we have a rule that says, where the President of the United States says the result of an inspection can come in, the inspection is an incident of command, and the inspection may include an order to produce a bodily fluid. And then the Air Force, carrying out the President's directive as well as a DOD directive, instituted an order that tells us who plays what roles in this system. And it says that a unit commander is to direct that the testing be done, and the unit commander is to provide the order to the individual to produce the urine sample. So here we have a violation of the Air Force instruction, and that violation, and we're not arguing that the mere violation of an Air Force instruction compels an exclusionary rule. We're saying that because the Air Force instruction was violated, this no longer falls within 313B. Now, Your Honor, could the Air Force rewrite this instruction tomorrow to allow an installation commander to issue the order? It probably could. We think there are very good policy reasons why this power is located with the unit commander, but those are policy reasons. If the Air Force wanted the installation commander to be the relevant official, presumably the Air Force could do that. But the system under which CRM and Miller's urine was collected was a system under which the inspection was the unit commander's inspection. And in this case, no unit commander ever ordered that he produce a urine sample, and no unit commander ever directed that his sample be subject to testing.
That the problem I'm trying to work through here is the military judge's findings in paragraph M, where he appears to recognize that General Ferris established a random selection program and that the program provided authority for generation of lists, but that it just wasn't done, the generation of lists wasn't done by the right person.
But it's more than that, Your Honor, because, again, under the Air Force instruction, it is the unit commander who directs that the drug test be conducted. And so it wasn't... Once Senior Master Sergeant Van Lingen identified Senior Airman Miller, then it's the role of the unit commander to put this person into the framework that the installation commander established. And I think of this as being rather analogous to Goldwater Nichols, where the installation commander is the service chief, and the unit commander is the combatant commander. So the installation commander sets up this framework, but it's the unit commander, the qua combatant commander, who actually puts the person into it. It's that person's inspection.
Well, under those circumstances, if we apply a Kacharis analysis, what is there in here that's designed to protect the individual as opposed to govern, as in Goldwater Nichols analogy, the management of the government?
Well, Your Honor, we think that the entire program is in part designed to protect the individual. We all realize that the your analysis can be admissible evidence. You know, Middleton and Vick will tell us this, but again, it's a particularly invasive form of inspection, and it must be carried out with particular sensitivity, Your Honor. And we think that is why MRE 313B refers to, you know, specifically highlights the order to provide the body fluid. It's an unusual type of inspection. And the AFI tells us who can give that instruction. And I would say, Your Honor, that that giving that power to the unit commander is in part designed to protect the service member. And you'll notice that one of the unit commander's functions is to not direct testing of an individual who was on leave, not direct testing of an individual who's TDY, who's on flight status, who's on crew rest status. And there's another provision that says that the unit commander will institute disciplinary proceedings against a service member who doesn't show up for the urinalysis, absent of reasons such as leave or TDY.
Well, that raises my final question of the series, and that is, that doesn't that indicate, this isn't a rhetorical question, but why doesn't that indicate that the purpose of the regulation here is to protect the government's interest in prosecuting an individual who doesn't show up, as opposed to protecting any of the rights of the individual?
Your Honor, I think that AFI 44-120 is clearly designed in part to protect the government's own interests. There's no question about that. But it appears that it is also partially designed to protect the interest of the service member, not to be prosecuted where that person had a good reason not to show up. And this is an instance where really I think the interests of the service and the interests of the service member are largely in sync. And by protecting the service member, one also protects the government from appearing to have a ham-handed program that subjects someone to liability, even if they have a good reason not to participate. They're synergistic, Your Honor. They're in sync with one another. They're not in conflict with one another. But it also seems to us that in this instance, regardless of whose interest is being protected, the question is, was this a legitimate inspection, an incident of command of the appropriate supervising official? And so even if those regulations that give the power to the unit commander are done for the government's purposes and not to protect the individual service member, in this instance, again, we're not saying that the exclusionary rule should be applied simply because the AFI was violated. We're saying that because the government did not carry out this inspection in accordance with the governing Air Force instruction, it was not a kind of inspection that is admissible under 313B, including the part of 313B that says in order to produce body fluids such as urine is permissible in accordance with this rule. And because it was not in accordance with 313B, the government's only theory of admissibility at trial, the government did not carry its burden of demonstrating admissibility under MRE 311E. To look specifically at the order that was given in this case, The order from purportedly Major Ryan, who we would refer to as Mr. Patrick Ryan at that time, it uses the term order or a form of a verb order 8 times on that one sheet. There's no question that this was purported to be an order. Under the Air Force instruction, it was the order that ostensibly directed the drug testing of Senior Airman Miller. And the individual that issued that order had no authority to do so at the time. Again, the Air Force instruction limits who has the authority to be the appropriate supervising official to order that a drug test be conducted and to order that a urine sample be produced. And that power is vested.
You're not arguing, though, that Mr. whatever he is couldn't convey somebody else's order.
We are not arguing that, Your Honor. That's right. If
you were to stipulate that Brigadier General Ferris had ordered all members of the base to drug testing, Ryan could pass that on and call it an order.
Certainly, Your Honor. Or if they had, for example, in this case, the Staff Sergeant Kerr, the trusted agent, had been instructed that what he was supposed to do when someone was unavailable was go up the chain of command. So in this case, the Logistics Readiness Squadron Commander was a reservist, a traditional reservist who was off at Nashua, New Hampshire, wasn't available. So then they went up to the group. And the Mission Support Group Commander was in a civilian status off in Texas. And then the Wing Commander was in a civilian status off at Warner Robins. Now what they could have done in that instance is they could have gone to the 22nd Air Force at Dobbins and gotten the 22nd Air Force commander to order this. And if they'd done that, Your Honor, certainly there would have been nothing wrong with Mr. Ryan.
And you're not arguing that orders have to be specific to people. You can do a general order, like a general order.
Yes, Your Honor. And in fact, there have been other Air Force cases that have upheld both an instance where there was a general order and an instance where a unit commander had a pre-order that said those people who are identified by the next random selection will provide their urine sample. And either one of those would have been permissible.
That's not the case here.
No, Your Honor. In fact, the military judge went to great lengths with the witnesses, and it was the military judge himself that gave this questioning to ask, was there a standing order? And he was told, no, there wasn't. And one fact that was particularly significant to the military judge, Your Honor, is that in some instances where a squadron commander and group commander was unavailable, the trusted agent in the past had gone to Brigadier General Ferris as the wing commander to get him to authorize, to order the inspection, to get him to sign the letter that is attachment 5 to AFI 44-120. And the military judge said, well, if mere selection constituted General Ferris's order to provide the urine sample, why would General Ferris ever have issued such an order? And that fact is particularly relevant to him.
Counsel, in that regard, it seems that we're arguing a different case here than the case that was tried in the field. And that is, the case that was tried in the field was there an order issued that would be a punitive order under Article 92? And the case that we're considering now is, was there a requirement under the AFI for an issuance of an order by a military commander under that regulation? And if not, was that a violation of Rule 313? And the military judge seems to be focusing totally on whether there was a punitive order here, and seems to have no recognition at all that there are quite a few orders that are legitimate orders that may not be punitive.
Yes, Your Honor, but I think that he was addressing the same concept, if you will, in slightly different language. And again, the reason for that is it comes back to that language in 313B and the negative implication arising from that language in 313B, that in order to produce body fluids such as urine is permissible in accordance with this rule, which carries with it the negative implication that in order to produce body urine which is not in accordance with this rule is impermissible. And so really, when he was saying it wasn't a lawful order, I believe what he was saying was this wasn't an order that was an incident to command. And that expression came up quite often on the record, Your Honor, the incident to command. And the very concept, I mean, the heart of the matter, as the trial counsel himself said, was paragraph 24 of his response to the motion to suppress. And the heart of that paragraph was the argument that this was an inspection incident to the installation commander's command and not incident to the unit commander's command. So I think
he's talking about unity of command and Article 37. This is all the language of Article 92. And as I understood your answer before, there's no requirement to give an Article 92 enforceable order as a general matter under 313B.
I agree with that, Your Honor.
So why shouldn't we have this case go back to the military judge for the military judge to do a proper 313B analysis and also do a proper Kacharis analysis if there's a violation of a regulation?
Well, Your Honor, the unity of command rationale significantly was not relied upon by the Air Force Court in upholding the military judge's ruling. So there were sound findings of fact by the military judge. There was a sound ruling of the military judge that there was not a permissible order of the type that would satisfy 313B. The Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, without regard to the unity of command rationale, held that the military judge had correctly suppressed the results of that new analysis. So there really isn't a need to send the case back to the military judge in order for him to parrot the language of the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals. Rather, this court should simply find that he did not abuse his discretion in suppressing the results of the urinalysis and the derivative evidence that the government conceded must be suppressed if the urinalysis is completed.
And what part of the CCA opinion would you look at as analyzing this in terms of the various authorities under the rule as they relate to 313 versus whether there was a lawful order?
If I may have just
sure. So it looks to me like the CCA is focused on the same issue, whether there was an lawful order from a commander to this individual, as opposed to whether your analysis could otherwise be sustained as consistent with the Westover program as long as it was randomly generated.
Your Honor, in the conclusion, the court says the inspection was not conducted in accordance with Military Rule of Evidence 313. So, I mean, the court there is recognizing what the appropriate test is. It isn't, and I see my time has expired.
You may take the time to answer the question, and Judge Baker has a question as well.
Thank you, Your Honor. So the court is recognizing the appropriate test, which is, was this a permissible inspection within 313? And earlier in the opinion, they emphasized the dichotomy between the installation commander's command and the unit commander's incident to the command and recognize that this was an inspection that was incident to the unit commander's command. And of course, in this case, no unit commander ever directed the testing to be done.
I think I know your answer to this question based on that, but the AMDS operating instruction 44-104, is that a instruction issued incident to the command?
No, Your Honor, and that issue actually came up on the record at page 39 when Senior Master Sergeant Van Lingen was testifying. And the question was, who issued that command? That order was first, it was issued by the Aerospace Medicine Squadron Commander.
I think you're racing to get to your case dispositive point, but was that issued incident to the installation commander's command?
No, Your Honor.
Putting aside your unit command argument.
Right. This is from page 39 of the record, Your Honor. The defense counsel asks Senior Master Sergeant Van Lingen, then how can the AMDS unit commander create an instruction that implements the program if it's the installation commander's rules? Answer, I guess he can't.
So he's the authority, the master sergeant's the authority on whether this operating order is a valid order from the medicine, the aerospace medicine squadron commander?
No, I'm certainly not asking this court to say that it should simply accept the senior master sergeant's answer, and I wouldn't want this court to simply accept his answer to some other questions during the examination.
And I'm not asking you to concede that the squadron commander, medicine squadron commander, is the unit commander for the appellant.
And Your Honor,
but I am puzzled by the argument that this is somehow not incident to the installation commander's command.
Your Honor, two answers. And to the first part, it's in the record that
the master sergeant doesn't think that's right.
But as a matter of fact, it's in the record that the AMDS commander is not in Senior Airman Miller's chain of command.
No, that's a different issue.
Exactly, but I did want to address that.
But your legal response to why this is an incident to the installation commander's command is that a master sergeant says it isn't.
No, Your Honor, but it's helpful to note that he testifies that this isn't an order by Colonel Coffey. And Colonel Coffey is the AMDS squadron commander. This is not an order by the wing commander. Nothing, and keep in mind again that it's the government that bears the burden here. Nothing in this order indicates that this is the wing commander's order. And just as we would not expect that, we would not attribute a company commander's order to the battalion commander in this instance, merely because a squadron commander issues.
So it says it directs the 439th Aerospace Medicine Squadron commander's responsibilities in the drug demand reduction control program at Westover.
Yeah, exactly. He's directing his subordinates, and again, I'll point to.
And then they go off and they send these things out to all the commands at Westover because he's just a robust kind of chesty puller guy.
Well, they sent out these draft orders to the individuals. The draft orders were supposed to be signed by the commander. In this incident, it wasn't. But, Your Honor,
they're not doing that because the base installation commander directed them to do it. They're just doing it because they're good souls.
But, Your Honor, the AMDS squadron commander subordinates have a formal role in the process. The testing administrative manager is a subordinate of the AMDS commander. So he certainly has a role in this. And the drug testing administrative manager at one point refers to that specific operating instruction as clinic policy. So let me give you an example, Your Honor. So certainly when the AMDS squadron commander is telling the testing administrative people what to do, that is a permissible order. It falls explicitly within his command functions. However, there's another part in it that says, essentially, don't let somebody leave once they've shown up unless the base commander tells them they can leave. Now, let's hypothesize that someone from the 439...
You're on your dime now.
Okay, I'll sit down.
Can I ask one question that will take 5 seconds to answer?
Yes.
Was the accused attached or assigned to the AMDS?
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
I'll begin my rebuttal by addressing Judge Ryan's question about USB Beckett and whether this court is positive in this case. Given the standard of review that it's abuse of discretion, the holding is not per se dispositive, but certainly it's a very persuasive analysis that should be applied in this case. Appellee's counsel argued that the Air Force has said that this drug testing program is incident to the unit commander, and that's simply incorrect. The AFI vests the responsibility of the drug testing program with the installation commander. It's the installation commander who establishes the program, and it's the installation commander who chairs the cross-functional oversight committee that oversees the program. The unit commander, as the Air Force Court recognized in its cases of Muhammad and Fletcher, that the unit commander plays no role in this process other than to simply provide the notification. He is a cog in the wheel, and as I pointed out to this court on previously, that part of the unit commander's role is to direct somebody that they have a duty to report. That
is there a standing order or regulation here, Westover, issued by the installation commander setting this thing up, other than this hospital reg?
The standing order is inherent in the bases in the installation commander's establishment and oversight of the base-wide drug testing program.
Is there any written regulation or letter or anything else establishing it from the installation commander?
There's no evidence in the record of anything.
There is nothing in the record.
However, okay.
Is this a machine that runs of itself without command involvement?
It's not a machine that runs amok with no command.
I didn't say that. I said, is it a machine that runs of itself?
It's a machine that runs in accordance with the directives in AFI 44-120 with the oversight of the installation commander. So it does to a sense.
Basically, without unit commander involvement?
In accordance with the AFI, there is a role for the unit commander, and that is an order to report for testing. However, that role does not, just because the unit commander has that particular role doesn't make it the unit commander's inspection. It would fly in the face of logic and reason to say this is the unit commander's inspection when the unit commander doesn't run this program. The unit commander has no discretion. Certainly if it was the unit commander's inspection, the unit commander could have discretion on what days of the week is this random testing going to be accomplished. You know, how many times per year is
well, in view of the fact that there isn't any standing order setting this up from the installation commander, it appears to be no one's inspection.
Well, the government disagrees with that. It's the installation commander's inspection. There is no written standing order, and that's because we have an AFI, 44-120, that sets forth, you know, every detail of this program. There is no need for an actual written order to just...
So there's no need for local implementation of this thing.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
There's no need for local implementation of this thing.
Well, no, there is a local implementation because the program...
But you're arguing that the thing operates of itself by virtue of 44-120. Or what are you arguing?
That the government's argument is that this is the installation commander's program that he runs pursuant to AFI 44-120. He is the individual, as charged in the AFI, to establish the program.
Right, and it's certainly within the province of the installation commander to issue an order or base regulation establishing this program, which does not appear on this record.
Well, the installation commander doesn't have discretion as to whether or not to implement the program. He's directed to establish this program, and he did, as evidenced by the testimony of the Drug Demand Reduction Program Manager, who said this is the installation commander's program. These are installation-wide inspections.
Counsel, I've gotten a little bit lost on your point with respect to the language of 313 and in the context of the dialogue, which is, in the government's view, what is with the language conducted as an incident of command in MRE 313 mean? What does that require? What does that language require?
The language, it all really ties into how this is not an unreasonable search and seizure under the Fourth Amendment. And that's because military inspections...
No, I don't want to hear about the reason for MRE 313. I want to know the government's position as to what that specific language requires.
The government's position is that specific language, that it's an inspection and an evaluation of the unit as an incident of command, is that it flows from the commander's role in ensuring the good order, the military fitness, good order and discipline, et cetera, of his unit, or his or her unit.
Okay, and how, for purposes of MRE 313, is the commander's role, as you've just defined it, to be demonstrated?
Certainly it's well established in case law that ensuring that members within the organization are drug-free is vital to the military fitness of the unit, and the installation commander has the ultimate authority over and the ultimate duty to ensure that for members.
And you're going back to explaining the reason behind 313. What I'm asking you is, how is a commander to demonstrate that an inspection is conducted as an incident of command?
Your Honor, it's demonstrated through his establishment and oversight of the drug testing program base-wide at Westover Air Reserve Base.
So who is the commander in this case for purposes of Rule 313, and where does in the record does it tell us that that person is the commander whose inspection is under review?
It's Brigadier General Ferris, who's the installation commander at Westover Air Reserve Base. And that's established through the testimony of Senior Master Sergeant Van Linden.
Further questions? You may conclude.
In the end, Apelli's random drug test was a valid inspection incident of the command of the installation commander as dictated by AFI 44-120. The fact that the manner in which Apelli was notified to report for the inspection was not in order by his unit commander simply means, possibly, that Apelli could not have been charged with violating an order if he failed to obey that order. However, the method of notification has no bearing on the validity of the inspection. The military judge abused his discretion in suppressing the analysis results. And if I could just say briefly, the Chief Judge Efron really hit the nail on the head there with in his questions to Apelli's counsel. The military judge was erroneously focusing on whether there was an enforceable order, and the Air Force Corps likewise erroneously focused on whether this memorandum was an enforceable order, whereas the real legal issue here is whether it was a valid inspection as an incident of command under NRA 313. Accordingly, this court should reverse the military judge's
rule. Reflecting my lack of skills as a carpenter, I'll emphasize again that those were questions and not points that I made.
Yes, Your Honor.
We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.